This is Rated R, Real Estate Uncensored, hosted by Derek Anthony, right here in the great state of Texas. What's up, y'all? Bringing the best folks in the biz with some great energy, knowledge, and special guests, and maybe, yes, maybe, even a few surprises. Featuring Derek's Dimes, Mia's Street Beats, My Favorite Things, and many more unscripted segments for your pleasure. This program is affiliated with the Woodmont Company, a national commercial real estate company based in downtown Fort Worth, covering the entire United States for all your commercial real estate needs, from brokerage, development, and property management, including tenant rep, leasing, buy and sell, and all types of asset classes, retail, restaurant, food and beverage, office, medical, flex, and industrial. Be sure to check them out at woodmont.com for all the latest listings and information about the Woodmont Company. Be sure to subscribe to our show and check out our site, thepodcaststudio.net. Welcome in, y'all. Now let's do this. Here's your host, Derek Anthony.
What is up? It is spring, finally, Mia. We're through Snowmageddon. My name is Derek Anthony. Welcome to Rated R, Real Estate Uncensored. We're real excited about our guests today. Mia, what's up?
Hello. How's it going, Dee?
Good. I'm excited. It's hump day here in Texas, and look forward to the second half of the week here. This entity that we have and the guests that we have, they were founded in 1995. They're based in Lansing, Michigan. They have over 200 plus locations and have a very aggressive growth plan, even with COVID almost over in 2021, mostly franchisee driven, and doesn't take a lot to get in. About $180,000 to $300,000 will get you a nice setup. And in 2021, they're expected to add over 80 locations in the U.S. And their claim to fame is not only do they offer the best coffee in the world, but mostly in one of their hooks and caveats is specialty coffee, and we'll get into that in a moment. And one of their mottos is living our purpose, which I love. We have one of the founders, Mike McFall. What's up, man?
Hey, Derek. Thanks for having me.
Was that an okay intro? Did I mess that up?
No, you were great. It's perfect. it's 248 locations.
Oh, there you go.
Nice,
I knew.
Derek. Nice.
I wanted to just be under than over.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So Mike's wearing a nice velour jacket. He's got some retro equipment behind him. We're doing a Zoom call today. Looks great. I'm assuming you're somewhere in Lansing today?
I'm actually in Ann Arbor. I live in Ann Arbor. My office is now in Ann Arbor, which is about an hour southeast of Lansing.
And your cohort, Bob Fish, is out doing work, and you're here doing some fun stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, give us a kind of an intro on you and Bob and kind of how this thing happened and maybe some background if there was something before 1995 that made you want to get into the coffee business. And I haven't mentioned the entity, and that's Big B Coffee is the name of the company and the brand.
Yeah, we have a story that is almost, what I would say unbelievable, but it's true. And if I didn't live it, I might not believe it myself. But I started, Bob started the very first store, and I started as a barista in that first store, working open till 2 p.m. every day. And, he ended up working on a second store. He approached me about becoming a manager in his business. I sat down with him. And the end result of that interview, was we went on a 4-hour walk around East Lansing, beautiful spring day, kind of like today, back in 1996. And we shook hands and formed a company as equal partners. And that's the company that we're managing today. And so we didn't know at that time that we were going to become a franchise company. We were just interested in building out coffee retail stores, and we started working on that. And then we transitioned to a franchise company in 1998, and we've been working at developing that business ever since. So, in the previous to coffee was my business partner, Bob, was in the high volume breakfast industry. So think eggs and pancakes, that was what he did. And, I didn't really have a history pretty big because I was 24 years old.
Mm-hmm. So how did the name come about?
Well, we had a name for many years up until 2006. We were Beaners Coffee. And Mieners is a derogatory term for Mexican Americans.
Mia, why are you laughing?
Because I knew what he was going to say. Okay.
You knew that history. Yes. So
Mia's from San Antonio. Just go ahead and make your own judgment there.
Derek.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to let you guys go with that.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. Carry on.
We opted to change the name, and we did that in 2006. And we always referred to our logo. If you know our logo, it's a big B inside of an orange box. Mm-hmm. And we always refer to our logo as the big B. And that's where the name came from. So we transitioned the name in 2006 from Beaner's Coffee to Big B Coffee, and we haven't looked back.
Oh, now I get it. Okay. I was trying to put it together. It took me about 30 seconds to figure
it
out.
It's funny. I was reading an article on y'all's website about how y'all were changing it to Big B as in B-E-E because of the honeybees or something. I was like, oh, wow, Derek messed up on the name. And then I get to the end of the article. It says, this article is a joke. I was like, dang it.
Were you aware of that, Mike?
Nope.
No.
I'll have to send that to you then.
Any press is good press, right?
I think it's on y'all's website. So. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about your expansion. Obviously, the 240-plus stores, mostly if I see your current map online in upper Midwest, are you guys migrating or want to migrate here in the south, say south of Missouri into Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, et cetera?
We do. And, you know, we are we're a franchise company. And so what is critical to us is the relationship with the franchise owner. And when we have the right partner, we will move forward in marketplaces. You know, we've been in Charleston, South Carolina for 14 years. We've got a great partner there who's been building the brand for this whole time. And, you know, we have a relationship in Jacksonville, Florida area, actually south of Jacksonville and Ormond Beach. But, you know, and that is, again, that's a great partnership. We've got a ton going on in Cincinnati, which is for us is south. For you guys, that's not south. but as a franchise company, we are more interested in the development of the relationship with the franchise owner than we are about specific geography.
Sure. Do you find some of your folks that come in, they already operate, say, a Wendy's or a Domino's or other franchisees, or they're kind of first-time operators?
Mostly we're dealing with first-time operators.
Okay.
You know, our industry itself is, you know, a lot of people are enamored with coffee. It's romantic. They like the thought of owning a coffee shop. They like, you know, then they love our brand. They love the product. It's a much simpler operation than running a Wendy's or something of that scale. And so, yeah, we deal with a lot of first time business owners. And, you know, to us, that's not difficult. In fact, in many ways, we find it almost refreshing, because when people come with experience, they come with experience, and that's good and bad.
Right.
And so, we don't really have any judgment either way, but, we have worked with a number of, I would say for sure, the majority of our franchise owners are first-time business owners.
Well, it sounds like before we were offline there with Andy that your team of what we call VP or development sales, finding these operators and pitching the deck is doing a good job, obviously, if you have a lot in the queue, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of factors there. You know, we have designed a modular drive-through, which has been, you know, from a real estate perspective, has really simplified the world for us.
Right.
You know, when we're out looking for 1300 to 1500 square foot spaces end cap with drive-through, you know, we're competing with everybody for that spot.
Sure.
When we're out looking for an outlot in a big box retail center, and all we need is 16 parking spaces, and we got to figure out where the utilities are, and we got to connect, that's a much simpler play.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's much more quantifiable too. People understand that. And so when they sign up for a franchise, they can envision what the heck they're doing. Whereas when they sign up for a franchise and they don't have any understanding of where the store is going to go, gray area is causes anxiety, and anxiety means people don't sign deals. When you can make the future more exact for them, which is what the modular drive-through has done for us, they can see it, they can envision it, and then therefore they move forward.
And in that concept, it sounds like you're still going to have some seating and dining as far as just hanging out inside, or is it just drive-through only?
Drive-through only.
Okay. So here in Texas, we have scooters. I don't know if y'all have scooters up there. That's doing that model. And then
we don't have them here, but I know of them for sure.
There's a new concept called the human being that mm-hmm. we've been seeing here pop up with a drive-through only concept as well. But I agree with you. I think that model is definitely the wave of the future and solves, like you said, a lot of makes it simple. Here's step 1 to 10, and here's the ground lease on how we can negotiate. Like you said, if utilities are there, and I'm actually representing a landlord now, and we're doing a scooters deal in an outparcel of a center in Stephenville, Texas, and we don't have coffee, and it's literally a 4-minute walk from Tarleton University. So all the students could walk over and or drive and get their coffee. But anywho, I'm digressing. But yes, so tell me more about the modular for your brand. Is it up and running, or is it still conceptual?
No, we have, I think 14 deployed as of today. I think one got installed today and opened. So we have operational numbers on 14 of them. They're doing very, very well. They've been deployed for maybe 16, 17 months at this point. And so we have a pretty good feel for how they do, and they're performing incredibly well. But you know, it's about simplicity. We're manufacturing these in Alpena, Michigan, which is, you're not going to be familiar with that is, but it's about as far from where you are as there is in the continental United States. It's northern Michigan, right? I mean, it's the tundra is where Alpena is, but we're also looking at a manufacturing facility in south of Atlanta to start working in being able to deploy these in the southeast United States very aggressively.
So, that's interesting. So talk to me about your product offering. What makes you different? I know specialty coffee, and just maybe a little bit about your behind the scenes distribution on how you actually select the beans and the product that you have at the storefront.
Well, you know, the coffee offering is pretty similar at most of these concepts, meaning, you know, the basic fundamental product we offer is a latte. Either frozen or iced or hot. And then there's all variants of that latte. And, you know, of course we have drip coffee, and we have, you know, something called, you know, like an Americano. And then there's more traditional drinks that people don't buy that many of. So the majority of our business is some version of a latte, flavored latte. And, you know, with different milks, plant-based milk, which is, you know, coming on pretty aggressively right now in our industry, which is great. And then, you know, you'd asked about what differentiates us. You know, for us, the differentiation is primarily a branding play. And, you know, I could get deep into the nuances of coffee and why, you know, the version of espresso that we use is better and so on. But frankly, you know, people don't care that much about that. They just care that it tastes better. And it does taste better. Yeah. And so the essence of our company is we are from the high volume restaurant business, as I mentioned earlier. And what that does for us is we run our cafes like they're high volume kitchens, mm-hmm. which makes it so that our product is more consistent, more efficient, meaning we produce it faster. So it's more convenient for the consumer. And so, you know, that there's so much to a shot of espresso pouring out of an espresso machine that tastes good, from procurement of the product, which you'd mentioned, to the distribution methodology, how long it sits in the bags before it is entered into the equipment, how you prepare it from a, you know, a grind perspective, from a tamping perspective, and so on. So that whole process came from the restaurant industry, which is unique. Mm-hmm. Most coffee shops were started by roasters of coffee. And many, many concepts are still roast their own coffee. We don't. We are restaurateurs through and through in the marrow of our bones. And that makes us more efficient. It makes our product better. It truly does.
So if I want to sign up and cash in or cash out and obviously be all in here, tell me a little bit about once I'm on board. I'm sure you have a training program, and do they come to Michigan, and kind of talk a little bit about how that, you know, handholding maybe for the first 90 days happens.
Well, one of the interesting things about our concept is we're developing what's called the area representative model. And what that means is locally we have a, franchise owner that we've partnered with to represent us locally. And so that's the person who is going to, you're going to talk to as a prospect. That's who's going, after you've signed, that's who's going to walk you through the real estate procurement process. That's who's going to help you get your store open, train your people, and be available to you ongoing in perpetuity. One of the things that we've struggled with, and this is going to sound weird, but we've struggled with emotionally over the years, is that we end up with franchise owners who are in remote locations who don't feel like they're being cared for, even though they are getting the exact same treatment as everybody else in the system. The area representative means that they've got a partner on the ground in their marketplace, helping them operate and develop their store. We support them. We support the AR, the area representative. Now, 60% of our stores are within an AR territory right now. 40% aren't, but the AR model is only 2 years old, and so we've really ramped that up very, very quickly. And you know, it's based off, if you're familiar with the Subway sandwich model, that's what we developed our the area representative model from, is the Subway model.
So if we have some listeners that, do you offer, like, if I wanted to buy a county, the rights to a county or 3 square miles of a city or a zip code, how does that work?
Well, you know, as a franchise owner, we don't offer geographic territory. From an area representative perspective, we do sign contracts for counties.
Okay.
And so but you have to be an experienced franchise owner before you can become an area representative. And so that's how we work. We don't sell we don't sell area representative territories. Mm-hmm. We grant them. So there's no exchange. You don't pay us to become an area representative. You apply to become an area representative. We select you, and then we move forward together. And that's a really different part of the model too. Like most contracts like that, the franchisor, us, would sell these territories. That was never how we wanted to do it. And that's, we built it. The woman who helped build the Subway sandwich DA model is now an employee of ours. She's our chief development officer, and she's the one that's built out this program.
Mia, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to say, is there an incentive to be an area manager? Because you said that they had to apply. Is it just because, you know, they want to, or?
You get paid.
Okay. Nice.
You get paid. And you know, there's, you know, it doesn't take too long if you investigate the DA model at Subway. And we built ours on the same sort of structure, meaning population and remuneration and so on. And, you know, these DAs are wealthy at this point.
So let's talk a little bit about, obviously front and center is COVID and politics and, you know, upper Midwest, especially Michigan, and a lot of the states had closed early or mid last year. I'm assuming some of your stores were closed, right?
We did it. Yeah. Yeah. So you know, a year ago right now, I was pretty much getting ready to pack it in, you know. It looked like the plane was flying in the side of a mountain a year ago. Right now, we were in our second week of this. Our revenue was plummeting. We went down. The worst week was a year over year, -38%. And that was 3 weeks, 4 weeks into COVID. We were down 38%. Then what happened was the governor put in the language about essential businesses. She specifically stated that non-alcoholic beverage retail was an essential business, meaning coffee shops, right? And so we stayed open, and stores started to reopen, and they did it in a very, very safe way. And I'll tell you what, the strength of the franchise business model was incredibly apparent throughout COVID, because we had local owners in stores taking care of their baristas, taking care of their staff, taking care of the customers, the safety of everybody. And that really came through. And when you look at how we were able to perform versus how a company like Starbucks was able to perform, you know, it's night and day what we were able to do versus what they did. So what happened was, is we crossed over on Mother's Day last year, which I think was May 9th. We crossed into positive same store sales growth rate over 2019. And then it just continued to progress, and we became, like, last year is the best year we ever had. And so we had, you know, I would say for 16 weeks, we were averaging between 20 and 25% same store sales growth rate, which is an absolutely absurd number. But what was going on was people were, you know, what we believe happened was people would go out, they would go out to get groceries or take care of their business, and they would stop in at our coffee shops to have a little bit of normal in their life for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And by the way, our biggest competitor, Starbucks, they did not do a very good job. They closed a mm-hmm. bunch of stores. They didn't reopen them. They handed us a whole bunch of market share.
That's good.
By not performing.
And so out of your 200 plus stores, do all of them have drive through or maybe 70%?
But yeah, I think you're about right on that 70%. Yeah. So I think it's, I think it's about 170, 180 stores are drive-throughs.
And then to dovetail into the PPP, obviously, talk to me a little bit about your franchisee owners and operators. They have a local bank, obviously, but were you all involved in assisting them and how to file or paperwork or just to, keep them, like you said, the angst and the frustration of, oh my God, I put all my life and savings into this thing and
yeah.
COVID hits and, how do I keep afloat?
Well, there's a number of owners that really struggled. I mean, non-drive-throughs really struggled at this moment, not all of them, but, and then in relation to how we supported them, we did a daily, and I'll repeat that, a daily town hall meeting at 3:30.
Wow.
And we would bring in all kinds of different experts to talk about PPP funding, about grants that were available. We had the guy's escaping me, he's with the Michigan Restaurant Association now. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You guys don't even know who he is. But so we had all these experts that came on. We had bankers that came on, and we didn't get involved in any of it, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. we can't. I mean, mm-hmm. in franchising, there's something called joint employer, and we have to be really careful about how much we weigh in on the employment practices of our franchise owners, because we don't want to shift over into the fact that they're our employees, mm-hmm. right? So, but we brought all kinds of experts on this daily call. I think we had one banker on at least a dozen times talking about the PPP, how to manage it, how to apply for it. And that town hall meeting still goes on today. It's once a week now, as opposed to daily. But that daily engagement was incredible. And there were so many cool things that came out of that. It was just dynamic.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard such of a great added value that you guys bring to that. Obviously a very unique, hopefully once in a lifetime situation, but obviously yeah. you want to keep those guys open as long as possible. So that's awesome. Talk to me a little bit too. I don't really like to talk politics, but it's on the table. It's been a talk of the town on the $15 minimum wage offering. I'm assuming most of your folks are probably maybe above that already. Is that going to come into play at all with your operators?
Oh, it's a factor. I mean, there's no doubt, right? And everybody worries about it. Everybody talks about it. It's something that's kind of a red button issue. My take on it is to my franchise owners is, okay, whether you agree or disagree, it doesn't matter. Minimum wage is going to go up. I don't know by how much, but minimum wage over time goes up. Mm-hmm. And so, we just need to be prepared for that. And then in the end, we need to make sure we're bringing enough value to the consumer that the consumer is willing to pay a price that we can pay our employees what we have to pay our employees. And if not, then we go out of business. So we better figure it out. And so you can't control it. So don't worry about it. It is going to happen. There are all kinds of competing forces out there lobbying. In the end, inflation is inflation. We just have to acknowledge that. The coolest thing that's happened to us anyway is that we do pay minimum wage, but our people also get tipped.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a huge factor in our QSR concept. Most QSR employees don't get tipped. If you work at a Taco Bell, you're not getting tips.
Right.
And so, but what we were able to do, and this was like, just amazingly fortuitous, was like about 18 months ago, we started offering the ability to tip on credit cards, which we had never done before. Nice. And all of a sudden this is anecdotal. But I've had a number of conversations with franchisees, and they're making anywhere from $3 to $7 an hour more than they were making before with minimum wage and cash tips.
Wow.
it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Right. And so minimum wage here is $9.50, I think $9.55, something like that. And so, you know, with cash tips, they were making $2 to $3 an hour. And then all of a sudden you stack on $3 to $7 an hour more. And all of a sudden our employees are, you know, that it's really been an amazingly beneficial part of all this. And during COVID, people were tipping like crazy.
As far as infrastructure and processing, you know, we talked to a lot of food and beverage guys, and one of the things that was happening prior to COVID was the delivery process and the apps and the process of Uber Eats and DoorDash and what have you. And there's a lot of operators that wanted to do it and they were holding off. Well, that cycle has shrunk. If you were going to survive on a 3-year process, came down to a 4-month process or shorter. What have you done in that same vein, and where are you at today?
Well, we partnered with DoorDash. So we did that really early, and we're very aggressive about getting that rolled out. And I've had multiple franchise owners tell me it saved them. So, yeah. So that DoorDash was, you know, really an important part of this transition for us. And you're right. Our cycle on that shrunk dramatically.
We'll get to it. I don't want to spend the money. Yeah.
That's DoorDash. And then all of a sudden DoorDash became, you know, a lifeblood for us. The other thing that we've done, which is pretty unconventional, is we have developed our own point of sale software. So all of our stores run proprietary software.
Nice.
And so with that, we're in the process of developing our own mobile ordering, and we've got that piloted now. I don't know how many stores it's in right now. I think it's north of 20.
If I was going to come on board and as an operator, I always like to ask this question because social media is such a big part of a marketing campaign. Do you all recommend or require either from a, say, franchisor, which is the corporate that you guys run, and also the local franchisee in terms of a percentage of sales on social media? And if you could share that, maybe what that would be.
No, we don't have any requirements. Uh-huh. What we do, and we've always believed in the philosophy of coaching and, you know, the carrot versus the stick. So what we do is we try to provide them a whole bunch of guidance around how to engage social media. And then we try to provide them a whole bunch of content. Mm-hmm. And some franchise owners do an amazing job and they see the benefit of it, and others don't. And, you know, that's up to them. But there's no requirement. Now there is some requirements contractually around local spend on advertising and so on. And so, yeah, that's part that can be part of their mix would be spending on social media, but it could also be radio or billboard or whatever it might be.
Well, I'm thirsty. How about you, Mia?
Oh, absolutely.
You all need to get here to Texas. Yes. When's that coming?
Yeah, we're working on that.
All right. One more thing is I've read, if you're still doing it, hopefully some type, I know you give back to the community on this program called Vet Fran. Am I saying that correct?
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, this started from a perspective of realizing that veterans made amazing franchise owners.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that conversation started. We started looking around at our franchise owners like, oh, he's amazing and she's incredible. And, you know, and it's like, well, he's a vet and she's a vet. And so the veteran makes a remarkable business owner, and especially inside of a franchise system. And so that's where that started. And then we started looking at different options on how to attract more vets. And, you know, that was how we ended up in the Vet Fran program. We discount the initial franchise fee in half for the veteran. But really, you know, it was sounds horrible, but it was kind of self-serving, because I'll tell you what, it's remarkable. The capability of the veteran coming
for sure.
Yeah, they've got good work ethic.
Yes, indeed.
Incredible.
Well, this is a Big Coffee. This is Derek Anthony of Rated R, Real Estate Uncensored, with Mia. We appreciate you, Mike, hanging out with us, Mike McFall. Check them out, Big B Coffee, if you like to sign up. All their information is on their website. And lastly, Mike, what we like to do is put you on the spot. We're going to play a little bit called My Favorite Things, okay?
Oh, boy.
It's really not that hard.
Powder blue pants.
That's it. Well, yeah. What is your favorite property in the world? It could be something you visited, or a hotel, or a mountain region, or what have you.
Oh, the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island in northern Michigan.
Really? Wow. Awesome. Land, if it was just a piece of dirt or a region of you know, not real estate, but as far as structural property, but land.
Yeah, same.
Okay. Concept, yeah. not your concept, but maybe your favorite concept that you've seen out there that maybe you like to knock off, or at least love the creativity of it.
Suburban wine bar with automated pouring.
Ooh. Yes, we're working.
It's not developed yet.
Yeah,
I'm gonna.
We're working with the self-brewery pour concept. If you'd like to learn more in Chicago,
I would like to learn more.
Okay, your favorite city in the world?
Charleston, South Carolina.
I do like that town.
Ooh,
your favorite restaurant?
My favorite restaurant would be the Chop House in downtown Ann Arbor on Main Street.
All right, and your favorite drink?
My favorite drink would be the Americano, 4 ounces of espresso, 8 ounces of water, and 1 ounce of whole milk.
Can I take the McFall special, please?
Yeah. No, it's really good. It's really good.
Awesome. Your favorite person, it could, you know, be a family member or somebody you look up to or admire, or both.
Oh, alive?
Dead or alive?
Well, my favorite person of all time would be my grandfather on my maternal side.
Awesome. That's awesome.
I want to be him.
All right. Your favorite music artist, solo or band?
I'm going to go with Chris Stapleton.
Nice. And your favorite celebrity, if you have one, some people don't, but who do you kind of have a
celebrity crush on?
A crush or just respect their craft?
Phil Mickelson.
Phil Mickelson. Mia's shaking her head like, who's that?
I'm sorry.
You're not a golfer, I take it.
No, I'm not. But I like to drive the cart and hang out with the boys. But
drink a little bit here and there. Yeah. Phil Mickelson. You know, I could get more creative than that, but I'm just going to stick with Phil Mickelson. I mean, yeah.
We know coffee's your favorite, but what about your favorite food?
My favorite food, my wife's Russian and beef stroganoff. It is to die for.
All right, next time. And your favorite automobile?
My Volkswagen GTI.
That's awesome.
Volkswagen gang, I drive a Tiguan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, Mike, thanks so much for the time. That wraps up the show, and we appreciate you, and good luck, and maybe we'll see you down the road in Texas here.
Awesome. You guys have been great. Thank you.
Mike.
Thanks. Well, that was cool.
It smells weird in here.
It wasn't me. Well, I learned something. The big B. So I think that's going to be the hook on the show. The big, in the quotes, B. That was cool. That guy was super cool. You could tell he was creative. He's velour jacket. We did a little Zoom with the video. Amazing, amazing story. You know, coffee is so competitive. And, you know, like he said, I think for me and most people, you get into a schedule and a routine. Like I have to have my coffee every morning. It's between two of these cafes, which I won't say, in Keller, Texas. But how about you? Do you have to have that fix?
My one cafe is in my apartment.
Ah, yes, on your Keurig machine.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not much of a go out for coffee kind of gal.
All right. Awesome. Well, Mia, what do you got working today?
Well, on the topic
Mia
of...
Mia Street Beats.
On the topic of coffee, I was reading an article about Jimmy John's founders investing in an emerging coffee chain.
Uh-oh.
I know. It's called 7 Brew Drive-Thru Coffee. And I just thought it was kind of interesting because I read another article kind of a while ago. Actually, when I say article, I saw it on TikTok, but from a credible source. And he was basically saying how maybe 10 years or so, coffee concepts didn't want to be near a Starbucks. They kind of strayed away. And then now, 10 years later, people, when they see a Starbucks, that coffee concept wants to basically be next door to that Starbucks.
It's kind of the Home Depot and Lowe's situation.
Exactly. And he was saying a big thing about it is because a lot of people kind of, I guess, grew up with Starbucks. So kids who were... millennials, you would call them.
Starting early age. I see 6-year-olds coming to Starbucks all the time.
Yeah, so basically the guy was saying how these millennials or whatever, maybe like 10 years ago when they were 15, kind of grew up going to high school or whatever and picking up Starbucks, and that was kind of the cool it thing when you were 15 or so. So now those millennials 10 years later are grown up, and they almost see Starbucks as kind of immature. Like they used to do that, you know, way back when they were kids. And so now they're seeing a lot of influx in people trying, you know, coffee entities that are not Starbucks because people just don't want to be there anymore.
It's not cool anymore.
Exactly. It's not the cool thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought bougie. That was interesting. So I feel like that's why we're seeing a lot of new coffee concepts kind of just literally popping up everywhere.
And that's why the restaurant business, even though they're not restaurants, but food and beverage is so hard because there's always something better or something different.
Right.
That people will get tired of and they want to go somewhere new. So
it's definitely hard to be different these days.
Yeah.
So, and then I have another article, some good news for Texas, that the COVID-19 vaccine will be available for all adults starting March 29th.
You think that's going to be a big party day?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think every day after that is going to be a big party day.
Not like what's going on in Miami.
I don't know what's going on in Miami. Aren't they shut down or
something?
Yeah,
pretty much. Like
the spring breakers.
Yeah.
Those kids are crazy on spring break. I went 1 year and I'll never go back.
It's nuts.
It took 10 years off of my life.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah, so super excited for the COVID vaccine shot for everyone. Finally feels like things are going back to normal and we'll be able to, I feel like Texas really has already been out and about, but now we'll be out and about more safely.
Yes, indeed.
And lastly, I have a super cool article about 3D printed homes.
So what?
Yes.
I want to live there.
Yeah. So there's a company called Icon, and they are building, or they've already built, their first home that's been 3D printed.
What?
Yeah. It's in East Austin, I think, off of Martin Luther.
Of course, it's in Austin.
I know. Yeah. Very progressive. So I just thought it was super interesting, basically stating how it could cut costs by 20% to 30%. But then I continued to read the article and it said that homes were going to start in the mid 400,000s. I was like, how is that saving any money? That's still expensive.
If the wind blows more than 10 miles an hour, please seek shelter.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I kind of continued to read it. 500 square foot homes can be printed in 24 hours, but that's as big as my studio apartment. So I don't know who's going to want to live in that.
I don't either.
So then, you know, as I continued reading the article, it said that this company, Icon, is kind of partnering with, you know, a bunch of organizations and NASA to apparently have homes like this be built on Mars.
Why not?
Oh, why not? God. I know. We're already killing this planet. Let's kill another.
Oh, gosh. You went there.
I know. I did. And that's all I've got for today, everyone. Yeah. I'm out.
All right. That was Mia Street Beats. We're going to get in a little bit of Derek's Dimes. This one's a little bit different. Basically, the top 10 for me on things that I've witnessed or just in life in general. Mia stole my number 10. That was the COVID shot. But kudos to Mia. And March 29th, that will happen. A few selling tactics that I want to kind of point out. Number 9 is continue to go for the yes. Me and I actually had this conversation a few days ago that if you have a client or a service or a customer that, and you continue to kind of prospect and lead them into a yes or basically a commitment, and to continue to ask those questions. For example, these sites that we're considering for this operator, we keep feeding them sites and he keeps saying yes. And so we're going to keep feeding them until he says no. So that's just a very simple sales tactic, no matter what you're doing out there and what you're selling. And quite versely is the go for no. If anybody's ever heard of that, you purposely structure the question so your client or prospect would say no, so you get them to a yes. It's almost reverse psychology, basically. Number 7, words matter in the real estate world. You know, we talk about this all the time in terms of the shall word and the will word. That's a big difference. Might mean maybe. Think about what you were going to say before spitting it out, because words do matter. Number 6, the National Retail Federation is forecasting retail sales in the U.S. could grow anywhere from 6.5% to 8.2% this year in 2021. Now, that's year over year. Is that assuming because of 2020 was such a down year? Probably. But they're basically saying that this could be the fastest clip in two decades, which I agree with. And I don't know if I hit on this last time. Number five, do you remember a Toys R Us store, Mia?
Were Absolutely. That was the it place for me as a kid.
Every kid, if you were like, if you're younger than, say, 20, you might not know what Toys R Us is, but that was the go-to toy store on Christmas or Thanksgiving, Black Friday. Well, sadly, the last two stores have closed. They're done.
I'm sad.
Yes. Sad day in retail and for all the kids out there. And now they just go to Amazon.
Exactly.
Number four, according to the New York Times, Austin, Texas is the hottest market in the country. Think about it. Dropbox, Dell, Tesla is moving there.
Is Google doing something there too?
Google's already there. Facebook, IBM, Samsung, Apple. Amazing, amazing operators and businesses there. And the traffic obviously reflects that. It's nuts.
Insane.
Yes. Number three, former Pizza Hut head is now the CEO of Topgolf.
I did see that.
And Callaway Golf bought Topgolf, and his name is Artie Stars. That's a cool name. So he's going to be running the Topgolf entity. Number two, Amazon occupies. You want to guess how much office space in the world that they occupy?
2%?
No, like a number.
Oh.
Is it a million or is it 600 million? Somewhere between there.
6 million.
44 million Jeez. Square feet, people. Just think if you were the rep for that company.
Yeah, I know.
That'd be kind of cool.
They probably have their inside guy.
Yeah, that's right. And number one is co-working, co-share concepts. If anybody is out there aware or have some space for like the WeWork and the Regis and the Share and the Vera space. Remember in South Lake, we looked at the Vera space.
That was nice.
Somebody who operates one, can you come on the show and tell me how y'all are going to survive? Because I just don't, I know it's being like direct, but I don't see it.
What? I feel like I do.
Well,
people are getting away from big offices.
Yeah, let's debate it.
I feel like people are getting out of big offices like the one that we're in.
Because
half the people are staying at home, half the people are going in.
But they can work from home.
Right. So they're working from home, but the other half who wants to come in, why put them in, you know, a big office like we're in? Why not just put them in a WeWork? It's cheaper, I think.
Maybe. We'll see. I think the jury's still out, but there's a lot of developers and brokers that are buying in on this concept. I don't really see it long term, but I know WeWork's been over leveraged financially for quite some time. And they just keep putting money into it. So maybe it's
about those little entrepreneurs who only have 2, 5, 10 people who can't, you know, afford to really rent out a big office space. So
maybe
that would be a good option for them.
Maybe.
I think it's good.
Mia's bringing the heat
and
today.
And it's nice.
And
those
it's nice.
Are so nice.
They are nice.
I want to be in one.
Well, okay. This is Rated R, y'all. Thank you so much. My name is Derek Anthony. And Mia, thanks for hanging out.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.
Please come and follow us. You can listen to everything directly on thepodcaststudio.net website. But, of course, we're available anywhere podcasts are streamed. My name is Derek Anthony, and we appreciate the support. Please share, listen, and follow, and subscribe. And we'll see you next time down the road.